The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappatoy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio for our Father's Day live show is none other than Mr. Hassan Godwin.
I ate too much.
So
also,
yes?
I'm not a dad, so.
That's why you're here?
Yeah, that's why. I don't know. You're the one who mentioned Father's Day.
Okay. On this week's show, we have Ellen and Jenny Felde interviewing filmmaker Dave Morrissey Jr. But before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's Morrison time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi
for your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of pop culture and comic book stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled to be on November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale right now.
Yes, because
because
it's November.
Also, I want to give our shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday Famous Resident Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, Millie Portes, and GTS Comics. Want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page.
Good.
Also on the It Came From Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a new discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 is on sale right now.
Impressive.
One of the other things that we do for the book that is on sale, we have our special designated shout-outs for people who contribute to the book and want a shout-out for special designated people on the show. And we have one designated shout-out for Mr. Jimmy Palmiotti.
Really?
Yes. actually, at our live show, our guest.
You had a ghost?
Our guest.
You had a ghost as a guest?
Elman, Jenny Felde, and Sarah Kaufman made a song. So I think I'm going to edit that in later on and play the Jimmy Palmiotti designated shout-out song.
The
designated shout-out song.
Nice.
A designated shout-out, that's what they got. You want to give them a song? You want to give Jimmy a song? Let's hear it.
What's your favorite song? I sing it.
Jimmy, you're great.
And finally, I want to mention that on Wednesday, July 8th, at the East Middle Poker Library, for our 106th live show, we're going to have special comic book creator and writer, Mark Torres, will be the guest.
You got Mark Torres to
I
be...
I did. Elman Jenny Foley will be taking over the show. She will be hosting and moderating it, and we will have a special guest, writer, creator, designated, Mark Torres.
That's a get, man. Congratulations on that one.
Yeah.
I hear he's really difficult to nail down for
he
an interview.
He is.
Yeah.
He's very hard.
Also, he's like kind of a jerk. So, like, you'd be very careful. Be very careful.
Well, I don't have to interview him because I'm not going to be there.
Well, I mean, he's going to be on the show. He's going to represent the show.
So if Jennifer's listening, listening.
Jen, he's a bit of a jerk. So, you know, just be very careful.
So, as always, we take it away with the sad news, and we have a slew of sad news.
You know why? You know why we have a slew of sad news?
Because we haven't had sad news.
Because you kept preempting the sad news the last two shows.
All right, so
so now we got to be all sad and depressed and walk out of here with our heads down and everything because you wanted to make the other shows seem happier. That's
how it works.
That's
a balancing act.
That's emotional engineering. That's not right.
We have actress Luann Ruth Scheiden, S-C-H-E-D-E-E-N, known professionally as just Anne Scheiden, died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While appearing in a handful of TV shows, she is perhaps best known for her role of Kate Tanner, the mom, in 102 episodes of the NBC sitcom ALF, which ran from 1986 to 1990. She was 77. So that leaves just the daughter, if I'm not mistaken, who played, I forget the name of the daughter, Lindsay maybe? But yes, it was, and Alf is still with us. Max is
it's
the father.
The voice of
the,
Alf.
The boy, yeah.
Alf was never
Paul
alive.
Fusco. Paul Fusco. Yes, Alf. Well, he's alive in our hearts and minds. Are you a fan of Alf?
No.
No, you
so
weren't a fan of Alf?
He's not alive in my heart. And
no, I'm saying, were you a fan of Alf, the show? Watched it?
No.
No.
So, which is why he's not alive in my heart and mind.
So, she was 77. So, moving on for some more sad news. Actress Margaret Kelly also died recently from lung cancer. While she was a dancer and voice artist, actress, she is perhaps best known for being the model of Tinkerbell in the original Peter Pan film way back in 1953. She actually did all the movements seen in the movie on a soundstage for the artist to animate. Of note, Margaret had, oh boy, prosopagnosia, prosopagnosia, which is a neurological condition that makes it difficult for a person to recognize familiar faces, known as face blindness. She self-published a booklet of short stories titled They All Look Alike to Me, and in 2016, she published her autobiography, Tinkerbell Talks, Tales of a Pixie Dusted Life. The name that I cannot pronounce, the metal condition, it's the thing that's been presented in that TV show, Brilliant Minds, with Zachary Quinto, who plays Spock. It's on TV now, so if you have an idea, that's what that is. You familiar with Tinkerbell?
I'm familiar with Tinkerbell.
Okay.
I don't know the condition.
Okay.
And I didn't know Zachary Quinto was on a TV show.
Wow. So... Tinkerbell, so all everything that was done in that movie, she pantomimed and they drew she was the reference for the art in that movie. So anything that you saw in the movie, she actually did on a soundstage. It's kind of interesting. Okay. She was 97 years old.
Oh.
So moving on for some even more sad news. Film critic Eugene Shallot, known as Gene Shallot, also died recently. Also no cause of death has been announced. Gene was perhaps most famous for being the critic on Today Show for 37 years, retiring in 2010, with him being quoted as saying, "It's enough already," in his retirement. he largely stayed out of the public eye thereafter, only appearing one more time for Willard Scott's retirement from NBC on December 15, 2015. Gene was most famous for having the crazy hair and the mustache, and there was countless parodies of him in multiple TV shows. And if you ever saw the mustache and the hair, there was a critic, you knew that was the guy. Were you a fan of Gene's stuff?
No.
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 You were a Siskel and Ebert guy or Richard Roper? Or what was the other guy? Rick Reed.
Siskel and Ebert.
Siskel and Ebert.
Well, I wasn't really. I just know them. Those are the ones I argued with over the television. I yelled at over the television as opposed to many others.
So, yes, I was
I know Rex Reed, though.
Rex Reed. So yeah. He also passed away.
Yes, he did.
But the hair and the mustache was always his iconic look. For Gene Shalit, and I was like, oh my god, there he is. And he
I know Gene Shalit. I do remember Gene Shalit.
See?
But he was like, hopefully they won't make another movie after Empire Strikes Back. So he was off my list.
Oh, yeah. He was like,
hopefully this is the last one that they'll ever make. So, yeah. And he didn't like Star Trek 3. He said there was a terrible scene at the end that almost promised a Star Trek 4. So, no. But I'm sad he's passed away. No one deserves to pass away just because they didn't like a movie that I like.
He was nobody. He was 100 years old.
Well, that's a good run. He got his letter. He got a letter.
Yes, as we've mentioned many times, we've been doing the show. You reach 100, you get a letter from the president.
Maybe. Trump might not have sent him a letter.
It's on its way. It's on its way.
It's on its way.
So moving on for the last bit of sad news. Actress... DeVay Elizabeth Chase also died recently of septic shock and meningitis complications. In her short career, DeVay was known for her roles as Samantha Darko, the sister in Donnie Darko, and its sequel, S. Darko, Samara Morgan, the entity that comes out of the TV in the movie The Ring.
Well, she comes out of the well. Well, and then comes out of the TV.
Yes, the well and the TV. But people remember her coming out of the TV. That was the thing.
I remember coming out of the well. That's why I mentioned it.
Okay.
I was like, it's coming out of the well.
Rhonda Vollmer in 32 episodes of the series Big Love, Joyce, the sister in the Fox series Oliver Bean, and of course, Lilo Pelaki, in the Lilo and Stitch animated series of movies of the same name. She of note, she was also the American voice of Chingo O'Jingle of
Good
the
job.
English dub the English dub of the film Spirited Away in 2001.
It's good that you prepared for this, though. Like, she
was 35 years old.
Yeah, she was.
I was a fan of The Ring, and I have my Ring story, which I've mentioned many times on the show. I took my ex to go see The Ring, who was, you know, the first Jennifer on the show, and I did not tell her that it was a horror movie. I told her it was a comedy called The Ring, and because she did not like horror movies, but I really wanted to see this movie, so I took her to see The Ring.
No wonder she's your
ass. And we went to see the movie, and they're playing, as you very well know, usually they'll play trailers of the genre of the type of movie that you go see. So we're in the theater, and she turns to me, and she goes, "Hey, Mark, how come they're playing all these horror movie trailers?" And I go, "I have no idea."
Wow.
And if you've ever seen The Ring, maybe after the first 2 minutes, you realize this is a horror movie.
Yeah, it's a substantial...
So, we're watching the movie.
Substantially horrific movie.
It starts off, and instantly, she turns to me and hits me on the shoulder. This is a horror movie. You lied to me. So, yeah.
And it was a deep and meaningful relationship you two had. My goodness.
But if the movie's called The Ring, it could be a romantic comedy.
You knew it wasn't, though.
Oh, I knew.
So there's no exoneration for you.
I'm just saying that it's plausible. that
oh,
could have been.
Boy. This is the moral ambiguity. The utter moral. I've told you my story about The Ring, right?
Yes. Well, yeah. You share it with the audience.
I don't want to. They don't deserve to know anything.
Oh.
All right. My story is basically I thought the premise of The Ring was ridiculously stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if you had a videotape that was going to kill you and you knew it was going to kill you, you'd never watch it. Done. This movie is over. And then I got the DVD, and there's a little feature in the DVD that said, "Don't watch this." And that was the first thing I clicked on.
Yeah, baby!
So, my theory was destroyed right there in front of me. And actually, I was the only one who knew about it because I was alone at the time.
Right.
But it was so embarrassing for me that I ended up having to tell everyone, and now I've just told the world. So,
yeah. There
you go.
So she was.
That is very sad, though. She's 35 years old.
35, like, holy crap, man.
Yeah, well, sepsis, that's meningitis. Those are worse than we think they are.
Yes.
Let's just say.
Yes. So that is it for the sad news. So we're going to take a quick break.
Thanks for that.
we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content, specializing in professional audio editing. I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds, from podcasts to songs. I've got you covered, whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs. Email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
This is Quentin Flynn, a popular voice actor known for Axel, Timon, and Raiden from the Metal Gear series. And you're listening to It Came From the Radio. Stick around.
Calling all comic fans, Hurricane, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Hurricane on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's Hurricane LI for details. Hurricane, where heroes unite for good.
This is Olivia Hack, the voice of Ty Lee from Avatar The Last Airbender, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hi, this is Tammy Stronach, best known for playing the childlike empress in the Neverending Story and upcoming Man and Witch fantasy film. You are listening to It Came From the Radio.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hello, this is Carrie Hoskins. I play Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat. You are listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking with Mr. Hassan Godwin
in the
studio, who ate too much pizza.
Ate too much
from
pizza,
the awesome
Godwin.
Pizzeria that I always get.
Roma.
Yeah.
Roma pizza.
So, as always, we do the not a sad news. So, from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new sci-fi film Disclosure Day has taken the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in $44.5 million in ticket sales in its first week of release, being at the new film Obsession, which came at the number two spot, making an additional $19 million in its fifth week of release. For those of you keeping track, the Super Mario Bros. Sequel is still the highest grossing film of this year so far, with $429.3 million, followed by the Michael Jackson biopic with $363.5 million. I've mentioned this many times, I'm probably going to mention it every time I say this, but I have a dubious relationship with biopics, and it bothers me that that's the second highest grossing film of this year, because it's not like it's a real...
How can you have a dubious relationship with any biopic?
Because it's like... It's
just biopics in general?
Yeah, because like they're fake, and they're trying to be presented as real, even though the movies are fake in the beginning. It's just a very weird thing to have. That like, oh, this is exactly what happened, but it's not really what happened at all. It's not even close to what happened. Having not even seen the movie, I know it's not even what happened, because every other biopic is like that.
Right.
Have all you right. seen Michael Jackson biopic?
Okay, the story that you told us about Jen and the horror movie,
yes.
The Ring, that's
yeah.
not exactly how it happened. No story is exactly how it happened. It is just a reconstruction, a reliving, a retelling, a subjective series of events that may or may not have been true, but they're definitely skewed a little bit from your point of view or your perspective versus someone else's. Therefore, there is no way that any retelling of a story that has already told or has already happened historically can be an accurate retelling. So, there you go. You're exonerated now. You may now go see biopics for the rest of your life.
That was legitimate.
Yeah, it was.
Or I'll just watch the Weird Al Yankovic one again, because that one is the best biopic ever in the history of biopics.
Which one?
Weird Al Yankovic biopic. Because Weird Al Yankovic made it into a thing, which I will not spoil. For those of you who want to see it, you should go see it, and you'll see exactly
UHF?
What I mean. No, the weird one with Daniel Radcliffe playing.
I didn't watch it because it's not an accurate depiction of the.
And that's why you should watch it, because that's the whole point.
If you say so, stop,
and I
stop,
do.
Stop subjecting us to your own mind virus, please. Please continue.
When you get your own show, the Comic Book Expert, on, we can be.
I won't have a show because I think these shows are ridiculous, and I would never do a show. Of my own.
So, moving on. From the There's Always a Way department. None other than the King of Comics, Jack Kirby, who, for those of you who don't know, co-created such superheroes as Captain America, Fantastic Four, Ant-Man, Hulk, Iron Man, and the Avengers, just to name a few.
More, yes.
Got a street in Manhattan named after him. From now on, Essex Street between Delancey and Rivington will be now known as Jack Kirby Way.
The street was picked, as that was the block where Jack Kirby was born way back in 1917, and Jack died in 1994. Nice. So he's got a name.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, see? Yay! That's cool.
Look at that. That's good news.
Yeah, see? We have.
That's better news than you don't like biopics.
Well, I wouldn't say that's
news. Let's stick with that stuff from now.
All right, so moving on. From the "We better hedge our bets as best as possible" department.
Oh my God.
None other than Disney / Marvel has announced that Avengers Part 4, which is Endgame, will be re-released on September 25th with a brand new footage. In addition to that, Part 4 and the new sequel Doomsday, which is Part 5, will be presented in quote-unquote Infinity Vision, which is described as, quote, a new certification for premium large format theaters and has the biggest, brightest, and most immersive cinematic experiences ever for moviegoers.
Please come to our movies. No one's coming to these movies anymore, no matter how big and comfy we make the seats and how much expensive we make the concession stand. So please come and see us, because we made these screens really super, super, super duper biggie.
I've been saying this for a while, and as I've also mentioned on the show many times, I don't watch trailers of a movie that I'm going to see, so I'm really like going and seeing it cold. So I really haven't seen too much of Avengers Doomsday like pre stuff. I know a few things
that
I'm trying to stay away.
There hasn't been any trailers out anyway.
But I don't think this movie is going to be as good as they're trying to make it out to be. I have a bad feeling about this movie.
Oh, okay.
Or what's your sign on that?
I don't know.
What are you expecting? You must be expecting something.
I have no idea. We've already discussed this. I never have expectations of any movies.
Anymore?
No. When's the last time I had an expectation? When's the last time I was like, this movie is going to be amazing, and I don't care what anybody says? Or this movie is going to be trash, and I don't care what anybody says?
Star Wars Episode 1?
No.
Yes, you would like this movie's going to be amazing.
Well, that was Star Wars Episode 1 was 1999.
You actually, when was the last time? And that was the first one that...
You have to go all the way back to 1999.
That's the first one I could pop out of my head. Pulled it out.
Okay. Okay, Mark.
It's possible.
And then after I came out of that movie, that's pretty much when I stopped doing that.
Well, now we know why.
But I don't usually go in for expect. The only thing I expected is that everyone was going to hate Episode 1 because... I think the irrational hate that everyone had for the prequels, even though there's legitimate criticism for the prequels, mm-hmm. the disgust that people had for it was sort of irrational. It was overblown. And then I knew that was going to translate over to almost all new Star Wars, mm-hmm. which it kind of has. Mm-hmm. It took until The Last Jedi, but that was my last expectations, like everyone's going to turn on this eventually. Mm-hmm. So Avengers, I hope it's good. You know, but I don't have any expectations as to whether it's going to be good. I'm not betting against it.
Okay, fair enough. So moving on.
Yeah,
last bit of news. From the Remember When You Actually Bought a Game for Keeps department.
How many people do we have in that department? Because I think we are spending too much money.
Two guys. There is a consumer rights group that is making a stand against, quote, live service and perpetually online games, unquote, that, once purchased to play, must be played online via the game's developer service. The Stop Killing Games movement has gone so far that in California, the Protect Our Games Act is moving forward in the courts. The bill is focused on game protections, with a focus on making sure companies can't shut down a game with no warning. Any commercial games that are being shut down, the publisher is being required to give players a 60-day warning before putting the plug on the service. It also requires all games to still be functional on at least some level, even if the online servers are down. The game should still be able to work in single-player mode with in-person or multiplayer, or capable of operating on local servers.
Yeah.
This rule will only apply to all games that are legally purchasable. Free-to-play games would be exempt of this rule, which, if the bill passes in California State Senate, would go on to affect all games released after January 1st, 2027. The bill would effectively prevent companies from having perpetually online games that are no longer accessible and a live service is concluded. That means that more games would be designed with the intent of being a complete experience.
Whoa.
Okay. But if you do pay for your ability to use a game, and no one else is playing that game, you should still be able to play that game whenever you want to. So that law does kind of make sense. It should be accessible and playable to some extent. And then because games are not cheap, they're like at minimum $70, right?
Yeah.
Minimum these days. So if you pay $70 to be able to have access to a game, and then the company is like, well, we don't have enough people on there, so click, and then then your $70 should be coming back to you, or some percentage of that money, because the theorem is that you paid for it in perpetuity,
right?
You're not renting, you're paying. If it's going to be a situation where you're going to rent, then the rates should come way down, because you're not getting the same bang for your buck.
Right, and one of the biggest issues are even for console games now, you just buy the digital version, and it's not a complete game.
Yeah,
and if the server goes down for Xbox, you can't even, I can go put the Nintendo on.
This is why I keep trying to tell these knucklehead kids about tangible media.
Right, physical media.
Because if you buy tangible media, you buy physical media, it's up to you to keep it safe and in a warm place and, keep it from destroying itself. But they can't take it from you.
Right.
And that's the whole point of buying things, is that it's yours after you purchased it.
Right.
So, I don't know. They'll learn eventually. They're learning now.
I think it's interesting that it's gotten so far that we're actually getting to a point where there's legal stuff happening, and it's getting to the Senate in California. That's pretty impressive. I gotta say.
This is going to have to.
It took them long enough to do it, but that's pretty darn impressive.
It was a racket for those companies to be able to do that to people, and they're just like, we need the server space. Beep.
It's crazy, right, that where they can just be like, you buy the game, and then you can't play it anymore.
No, sorry. It's a waste. This will make a nice coaster. If you know what coasters are.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the game City Heroes, which was a game I used to play as a long time ago as a youth. And the game got shut down, and the developers and designers loved the game so much they kept it going themselves. And they actually managed to recently purchase the license to bring the game back, and it's been back on various forms. So you can go play it now completely for free.
Nice.
And you can still enjoy the... I mean, it's still a dated game, but you're still playing. There's new people there. You still enjoy it as much as you can.
Yeah,
and now that they got the license, they're going to be able to expand and do more.
There's a whole aftermarket for these games. There's a lot of people who are not, like, athletic gamers who still like to play games.
Yeah.
And they want to use some of the games that they still have, you know?
That's why the popular games, if you go onto YouTube, you see a lot of people playing the console games, because you can still play a console game. You can't go and play an online thing.
Yes.
So we're almost out of time.
Oh.
That's fine.
Amazing.
Do you have any final thoughts?
My final thought is don't eat too much pizza. It affects your entire game.
Okay. So my final thought is this. Hey, everybody go to the Eastmill Public Library on July 8th so you can be part of the show and listen.
Go see that guy, Mark.
Yeah, see Mark Torres being interviewed on the show.
Because I hear he's dirt.
And what they'll be doing is he'll be giving away a free comic with issue 1 and issue 2 of Designated, and they're also going to be giving away free tickets to the TropicCon, which is a big convention
Long
Island.
Because I want free stuff.
So that is it for this week on our segment. If everybody listening to us on the air, we'll see you next time. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It came from the radio.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe. And I am here at CradleCon, and I am with It Came from the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
He-Man is ho-hum. Those are the words that I read of a movie review back in 1985, a brand new He-Man movie, Secret of the Sword. I was not able to go see that movie in the theaters, but I really wanted to. But that headline of that movie review stuck out of my head. I've waited about 40 years to tell this story. So now, I'm going to talk about the new He-Man movie 40 years later. And I can say the same thing. He-Man is ho-hum. Now, for context, I will say that I am a fan of He-Man. I was a fan of the toys when they first came out. The Barbarian He-Man, as I like to call them. I read the mini comics. And when the Filmation cartoon came out, I actually did not like it. I was very upset. I was like, what the hell's an Orko? I remember my confusion of what the hell was I watching. But it did grow on me. I did enjoy it. I did become a Filmation He-Man fan. So I was a fan of both the Filmation He-Man and the Barbarian toy He-Man. Years later, they made the reboot on the Cartoon Network, which I didn't have at the time. So I didn't get to see that, and I still have yet to see the new version that came out. I was a fan of the Netflix She-Ra series. It was pretty good. It had its ups and downs, but overall it was enjoyable. I really love that opening theme song. I was a fan of the Kevin Smith He-Man, kind of, sort of. But I did not like the continuation, Further Adventures of He-Man when he was in space. That was after the Filmation came out. So I can say I'm a pretty well-versed of the He-Man universe. I'm a pretty big He-Man fan. Not the biggest of fans, but I'm up there with, you know, enjoy the property. So I'm going to give my thoughts of the movie. And spoilers may and probably will be mentioned. I can say, as I already said, the He-Man was ho-hum. It started off with such great promise. I think I've mentioned it many times on the show that I was worried it was not going to be any good. Now, as if you're listeners of the show and fans of me in particular, you know I rarely watch trailers, especially for something that I already planned to see. So I was going in it cold. I really didn't see any trailers. I really didn't know too much about it. I knew some of the casting. And the biggest issue, I did see the Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie, and I saw that on video cassette because I did not want to go see that in the theaters because Skeletor had a face, and He-Man did not look like He-Man. No disparaging remarks to Dolph Lundgren. He was a great Drago, but He-Man, he was not. So, as I mentioned, I'm going into this movie pretty blind. I was concerned that they might do too much Earth stuff. I was concerned that it was going to be too serious. I was concerned that they weren't going to treat the property with the respect that it deserves and the lore. And I watched it, and it kind of felt like Bumblebee, where the beginning of the Bumblebee movie was great. It was exactly what you wanted to see with Transformers. And then it had the Earth stuff. And then it ended with a little nod to the You Got the Touch theme song, with seeing Optimus Prime as Optimus Prime for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, in live action, quote unquote live action form. So this movie started off with promise. And it felt like the other Transformers movie, the Michael Bay Transformers. The tone was all over the place. The humor just did not land. It felt very jumbled. They had to include a lot of the things, which I thought was kind of cool, but they were just throwing it in there not to give you any type of context. The story was really bad. It was really hard to watch. And the fact that it had so much promise, and even the end of the movie had promise, but the middle, not so much. I thought Teela was great. The race swapping of Man-at-Arms, I had no issue with that. Even the race swapping of Ram-Man was fine. Jared Leto did not bother me at all. He was a little tonally jarring, but overall he was fine. The other problem I had was the story tried to answer questions with time jumps, and a good writer, when they write a time jump, usually can fill in everything that has happened within that time jump, and not a time jump for time jump's sake. And that is a glaring hole in the story. The two time jumps that they used in the movie was not very good. I was expecting a Flash Gordon type movie. That's what it needed to be. Sam J. Jones, Queen music, which they did have a Queen song in the He-Man movie. But that's what I was looking for. That is the kind of tone and action and visuals I was expecting with this movie. I got the visuals. Everything else fell flat. And it's interesting, the reviews are either a lot of people love it or you hate it. There's no in-between ground, and I guess I'm going to have to be on the I wouldn't say I hated it, but I was very disappointed at it. So, with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, I'm Olivia Younkers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came from the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
You're listening to It Came from the Radio. I have Dave Morrissey Jr. here. He's an actor, director, producer, pianist. He's a piano player. It's not a derogatory word. He's a music composer. And we met, luckily. I'm very grateful to meet him while I was the effects makeup artist. Did a little glam, but I was doing some special effects makeup, turning regular humans into sickly heroin addicts, junkies, for the movie Junkie Diaries coming out. So welcome, Dave Morrissey Jr.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. So let's go into how we've met and what we've worked on. I think I had like 5 shoot days with you as the director, and I quite enjoyed it. I like your process. So just tell us a little about Junkie Diaries film that is written by Nikki Silva. She's also acting in it. She's doing locations. She's doing casting. Seems like you guys are also maybe co-directing a little bit, but you're really the director. So you're directing her story. What's this process like?
Yeah, basically, I'm glad you put it that way. Yeah, basically, it's a collection of true to true-ish to not true from our lives, but true from events that we've read about and heard about, stories surrounding addiction and attachment. Nikki approached me to direct it a couple months ago. She mentioned that she had this short film, and as we moved through it, really trying to bring her vision to life with this, we were kind of like, well, let's, we got 30 pages, what's 30 more? And so we decided to make it a feature, and so it's been a really wonderful process. I'm really proud to be the director on this movie with her.
Yeah, I can definitely see why. I work on a lot of films, and some I'll tell people, you don't need to see it, or, do yourself a favor and don't watch it. Things I've acted into, but no, this, I can't wait to see it. And I also can't wait to recommend it, because almost everyone I know, I guess over the age of 20, has probably dealt with addiction, something, or they've, whether someone else has been through it. And I think there's a lot of important messages, and also a movie that has concepts in it that people can relate to, can make people feel less alone. So I think it's a really meaningful film that you're working on.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy about it. It's a beautiful story. I'm really happy about it. Proud of the work that we've done so far. We have an amazing cast, with Juan and George, and obviously she's a great actor. I use Nikki in a lot of the stuff I direct, a lot of the commercials, branded content, music videos, short films, long films, all sorts of stuff. Nikki and I we have a good professional relationship that lasts over 10 years. And
oh, wow.
We've done stuff for Intel. We've done stuff for space.com. We've done stuff for all sorts of wonderful clients.
Really cool. Yeah. You guys work really well together. You communicate efficiently. You also know how to have fun. You get a lot done. Those are the things I look for in people to work with. You got to have fun. You got to get stuff done. You got to be an efficient communicator. You don't have to explain everything you do over 45 minutes. So what are some things that you must do before you're directing someone else's script? What are some like do's and don'ts?
I don't know. Handle your ego shit. I think that a lot of artists, people who are creative, they get into the arts, into the professional arts world for a variety of different reasons. And I think that the number one thing you need to do before handling someone else's script is just to handle your own insecurities. Because that shit'll creep up on you in a heartbeat. And it'll be like this one thing that everybody else kind of sees about you, but no one wants to say it because you're getting them a gig or you're giving them an opportunity. If you can't embrace your own flaws, if you can't embrace looking at yourself like a reasonable human, and if you can't look at your blind spots, most importantly, you're going to fumble and you're going to do more damage than good. That's my opinion.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. On any role, I'll ask people for like reviews. I'll create my little focus groups, whether I'm gardening or acting or doing makeup, or, you know, I never taught tennis, but I taught workout classes. I'd always create some type of focus group, like, just tell me things that you see, because I'm not going to see everything in every profession. Yeah. So.
Yes, that, well, that's a great thing you got going on there. I wish more people thought like that in the arts, you know, but I mean, the more that you do and the older that you get, the real ones stick around. And the people who really want to create good work and create really good collaborations, they stick around and they keep doing it. So it kind of fixes itself over time, but you just got to stick through it and have the willpower and discipline to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Definitely. Yeah, my dad's a dentist, 5 houses down, and I'm his one-woman focus group. I constantly tell him what works and what doesn't work. He doesn't really like to hear the criticism, but I think everyone should receive criticism running your, even if you're running a dental office and it's from your daughter. I'll tell him all types of things, and sometimes we'll argue, but it's like, it's just to get better. You can always be better in every profession, even if you've been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah, you can't force people to be receptive about criticism. I learned that pretty quickly. I was an error disclosure consultant for a hospital that was going through a big, like, it was a public hospital, and so they had a big restructure, rebranding, and they wanted to make people feel more comfortable being there. I can't say which one, because they did, but, you know, you'd be surprised how many doctors have such a hard time with criticism or the idea that they are going to show up imperfect, and they have to be okay with that. They have to be okay with other people seeing that. That sort of fear of not showing up perfect, that transcends into the arts, it goes into politics, it goes into media, it goes into everything. Everything that's worth something, everything that would make someone quote unquote proud. Any career like that, you're gonna get people who can't take criticism, and it's really important to have compassion for those people. So that you don't get absorbed into their bullshit, mostly. Mostly as a form of self-preservation, you should be compassionate.
Yeah, that too. So switching gears now, I watched some of your acting scenes, and I watched you play the piano, and I watched you direct. So as an actor, your body and your brain is an instrument. I'd also argue as a director, as a producer, your body and your brain is an instrument, because you'll be running around on set, you know, carrying stuff and moving people around, and you got to think and make decisions. So with directing, you also need to see the scene that hasn't yet been created in your brain or just on paper, and you got to create something that doesn't exist. Sometimes with actors that have limited time availability, or maybe they're difficult, they don't understand things, and sometimes you're on dangerous locations, maybe you're guerrilla shooting. I don't recommend guerrilla shooting at the Met. I've done that, and hiding from security guards and running around, but you know, you could do it. And sometimes you have a makeup artist like me that's asking, hey Dave, on a scale of 1 to 10, exactly how sick do you want your heroin addicted actors to look? Do you want them to be a 7, Dave? Do you want them to be a 4? And you got to answer my question. So you got to do a lot. So what are some things that you do to keep your mind sharp and able to make decisions quickly? Which you do. Good job.
Thank you. I think that really a lot of people think that filmmaking and creativity is really subjective. I don't really subscribe to that. I think that there's a science to all of these things. There's a reason why every movie in the movie theaters has a story structure that's going in the same sort of direction. There's a reason why human psychology is a field and has an immense amount of studies across the world, across time, to dictate how people think and feel and how they behave, what their attitudes are towards things. Same thing as with marketing. If we weren't such predictable creatures, then those industries wouldn't really exist. And so I encourage everyone who wants to really get into directing to get their head out of their ass and to start reading literature about what story structure means and why story structure works. Story structure isn't like an idea to create something that's commercially sellable. Story structure is the philosophy that you can immerse someone to change how they think and feel and what they do regarding something about any subject matter that you want. And if you don't understand what the brain looks for to understand something and to relate to something, then you're going to fall flat on your face, and you're just going to look like some, I don't know, some fucking nowhere. And that's the sad truth.
Right. So story structure. What are some things about story structure to know? Anything offhand you could just enlighten?
Oh, sure. Like, look at this interview. What did you do at the top of this?
Who you are?
Well, the setting and the inciting incident, those are the beats that you hit in the right in the beginning. We know we're in a podcast. We know we're in a discussion. We know that we met doing something, and we're about to go on this journey together. Right. You know, now we're in the journey. And at some point in this conversation, there's going to be a revelation, and then we're going to come out smarter than we thought. That's a story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well said.
Yeah, you know, so there you go. There's that's an example of structure. I mean, you can see it in I could go into this for hours, but I'm not going to.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do a follow-up on story structures. Just an hour of story structure, a how-to. You can pay in with a webinar, and you can actually learn something. So we're going to switch gears, get a little more personal here. Now, acting, directing, especially producing films, in my opinion, it can take over your life. Sean King said, watch out. It'll take over your life. You know, he was warning 20-something on set. And it's like, yeah, it has definitely taken over my life since 2023. This is pretty much all I've done. You know, I haven't been able to play tennis. I have Equinox down the street. I barely go once a week. I barely get in the gym downstairs. I have my own gym. It's taken over my life. So work-life balance. Do you believe in work-life balance? Do you want it? Do you have it? Do you recommend it? How do you have it? What are your thoughts on this work-life balance thing? Personally, I don't care about it, but
imagine I was like, it doesn't matter.
Maybe not. I don't think it does to me anymore.
Okay, well, that's a beautiful opinion, and I respect that.
Except for my parents.
Yeah, well.
My parents matter, and my dog. Continue.
So that happens. And all of a sudden, you get structure when things start to matter. My opinion about it is that there's a lot of philosophies on this, but I think time management and routine habit building is the secret sauce. I think that, you know, one philosophy that I've heard that I think that, you know, everyone here should try at least once is to have 5 hours a day on the thing that's making you money, two to 3 hours a day on your passions and the future of your career. So if you want to be an actor, 2 to 3 hours a day on your actor stuff, 5 hours on what's actually making you money, 2 hours on administrative stuff, and then the rest of the hours that you're awake on just whatever the fuck you want. That's what I've seen work the most.
Nice. Wow.
I find that people who just really immerse themselves in a creative thing and don't give a fuck about it, I personally find, and don't take offense to this, I'm not criticizing you at all, but I find that there's something else that's kind of fueling them. Fueling them. And sometimes those things aren't so healthy. Sometimes the things that fuel them is this like undying nerve to be proud enough to be your children, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What happens when that fuel runs up? You know what I
mean? Right. Yeah.
Stuck, and then all of a sudden you have no habits, and you're depressed, and you're sleeping because you can't even do the thing that you love because it doesn't bring you joy anymore. Because what brought you joy was a sense of approval. So you know, like it's the same thing about people who want to be famous. Why do you want to be famous? Oh, because I want to be hot. I want to be rich. I'm getting real raw.
No. I totally agree with you. And you know what? If I did one thing, like just acting, we burn out, or just makeup. Be burnout, or producing other things to be burnout, or just radio. But I do so many things, and what I found was I spent so much time to the point where someone called me a socialite. Back, I'd say I had a boyfriend straight from age 14 to like 24. I was like a professional girlfriend, and so it's like I've been to all the parties. I've partied with Crown Prince of Burma. I've stayed out. I've done to the after parties. I've drank. I've almost died. I've definitely overdosed. So it's like I know what's out there. And now I have so much fun creating all the stuff I do, and everything's so varied. Mm-hmm. So, and it does involve like friends and family. My parents are my favorite comedy writers. So it is actually balanced in a weird way. But yeah, no, if it was just like radio or I would shoot myself in the face.
Yeah, I think it's important for anyone who has a child, a teenager who's like doing well creatively, if you're listening, and someone's like, oh, but focus on one thing. Just like understand that might be someone who has a hard time cross-pollinating ideas.
Yeah.
That might be someone who has a hard time combining unrelated domains. They might have a hard time understanding the big picture in diverse fields just because that's the way they were brought up. That's their survival mechanism, or that's just how their brain developed. I think that when you are someone who is a bit of a polymath, or otherwise known as a Renaissance person, you should look at those connections, because those connections can lead to eventually, I don't know, big level exec C-suite positions where you're managing a lot of creatives and helping a lot of people develop their skills. So I encourage anyone who does cross-pollinate ideas, who does do a lot of different things, to really like build that skill, because that skill, that's a high value skill that you can't really learn in school. Yeah, so I think that that's a wonderful thing. And I don't know, I've done it, so I think that other people can do it too.
The same piece of advice to a friend of mine who's a writer. He said, I want a writer, I'm a writer, I want to sell the script. And I said, no, listen, I don't know everything, so maybe don't take my advice. But my unsolicited advice to you would be like, learn at least 3 skills. So, you know, I know makeup, I can know acting, I can do location, script supervising, casting. Okay, that's 5 right there. But I said, if you're just a writer and you just want to sell your script, there's only so many sets that you're going to be invited on, only so many people. If you can learn just lighting, maybe be a gaffer, you're going to be on more sets. You're going to learn more things. You're going to get more opportunities. So
yeah, I would say
more things.
There's an awful thing I'm going to say. If you're a writer or a gaffer and you're strictly like, no, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. The AI revolution that has yet to really happen is going to, I think it's going to wreck you, because what I've seen possible in, you know, operational efficiency committees and 3,000 plus corporations across the world, they are talking about consolidating those types of jobs.
Yeah.
And they're doing it with levels of technology that we've never seen before. So good luck
100%.
To you. I hope you adapt and
if
you ever want to talk about it, hit me up.
1000%, which leads into the next question. Is Hollywood dead? My uncle worked in Hollywood. He worked on Dr. Phil and Oprah and filmed some of the top shows that people watch. And now he's in Malibu and he's retired. Maybe we'll have him on the show. But yes, Hollywood dead.
If we're talking about like the physical, actual geographical place, Hollywood.
That too, yeah.
Listen, I've been there every year for the past 10 years and I've seen a solid decline and a rise in aggressive, violent homelessness. Homelessness. I've seen more and more empty buildings. I've seen more and more broken roads in Hollywood. So that is the physical, literal Hollywood. Also, I've seen more and more, if you're talking about the economic Hollywood, I've seen the economic Hollywood dispersed to anywhere from Atlanta and New York and Miami to Hungary, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. We're not in just the U.S. anymore.
I know.
There's that. It seems to be dying. If we're talking about the branded Hollywood, we're like, oh, Hollywood, here we go. Mm-hmm. America makes the big movies. That as well is being killed by tax incentives and an overwhelming of things that the American government is not really paying attention to. I'm not going to get into politics. And as far as the conventional idea of what the Hollywood system was, I mean, the star system died a long time ago. We're seeing the ghosts of it right now, and we got a peek of what the future is going to look like with the influencer boom in 2020. Now, I do think that the influencer bubble is in fact a bubble, but I think that the philosophies of the influencer, you know, branded content culture is going to disperse into everything else, because Hollywood isn't getting funded the same way that it has been before. And the funding isn't actually going to what we consider, you know, the Netflixes of the world. They're going to branded content. They're going to influencer deals. That's where all the sponsorship money is going to. Back then, Audi would have a secret under the table deal with Disney and be like, okay, we're going to have Captain America drive some Audis, you know, and that'll be our product integration, and we'll get X amount of views and X amount of expectations out of it, and that'll cover this revenue of our market stream. So we'll get like 16 cents per 3-second view on this. But like, that has become so like implemented into the social media ecosystem that I think that we're going to see more and more branded entertainment. Right now, we're seeing vertical soap operas really take a boom, and you might hate it. You might be like, oh, I'm horizontal only. Good for you. I'm proud of you for being such an artiste. And yes, you will be a part of when filmmaking is now a niche where we're getting really important stories told and the money won't be there. Yes, that is great. Good for you. And you will be there and you will stay there. Is that where people are going to be making a living doing this? I don't see that. I think that people are going to be making a living doing more social first content, even in the narrative world. And you know, you might love it, you might hate it, but I challenge you, if you do hate it, find a way to make it work and find a way to tell a meaningful story with it. The first people who do that are going to be oh my God, they're going to be so powerful in this industry. It's not even going to be funny.
Totally agree. Yeah, that's what I'll do with my Haley Weinstein producer from Hell series. It's definitely going to be all vertical. It's definitely going to be watchable on your phone. It'll definitely be
that.
Highly
yeah, go for it. Hey.
So yeah, no, this year I'm finally going back to extreme comedy, but I spent 3 years doing some pretty professional, you know, mind-numbing commercial work. So, you know what? I'll ruin my reputation with this. And funny enough, my last guest of the day, I asked to be on my Insane Man Success Network group. I'm not going to say who it is. You're never going to know who the last guest is. But he said, oh, I'm more serious. I don't know if I should be interviewed by a pirate or something. So, you know, what I'm going to be doing is definitely not for everyone. But, yeah, it's not going to just be in one genre. It's going to be all over the place with the socials and embracing influencer culture. And it's not just catering to SAG or Hollywood. It's doing what I think is cool in my brain, which, you know, is more modern. Because, I mean, Unilever, I think, has spent $30 million thus in putting into the influencer culture. So this is mainstream top companies now
exactly.
That are
that's where the money
that's where the money is. Yeah.
That's where
definitely.
It used to go to Netflix or Paramount or Lionsgate or Marvel Studios or any of that.
But,
100%.
So anyway, so we're at the very end of the interview. I have more questions to ask you, but hopefully have you back, or maybe we'll have you on the Man Success Network if you could take it, if it's not too crazy for you, like it is for some people.
At this point,
we'll
see. Be a pirate. Interview me. I don't care. That's fine.
So give us your closing thought, anything on your mind, and where that viewers can find you, socials, website, anything.
But I mean, to me, if there's a part of the news that you really just don't want to look at, just challenge your fears. Because I'll tell you, if you don't challenge it now, life is going to rain down on you and wreck you out. Just take care of it now. The pain today is easier than the pain of tomorrow. Make it happen today. Aside from that, where can people find me? You know, I'm all over. I'm on Instagram. I'm at Dave Morrissey Jr., 2 R's, 2 S's, DaveMorrisseyJr.com. You can look at my portfolio if you want. You know, I'm around. I do a lot of, you know, experimental, you know, sort of music, film, theater events at my place. It's kind of like a lab or a industry embassy. I like to think of it as for creatives to get together and do cool. So, you know, drop me a line if you want to get coffee, if you want to have a digital little meetup and see what we can do. Let's go for it.
Yeah, and you know what? He's doing a really great job directing Junkie Diaries. Not that, again, I always say this, I'm not the end-all, be-all. It doesn't really matter what I think. But I have worked with, I don't know if it's 300 directors. It's a lot. And you're very easy to work with. You know, you're very clear communicator. You have clear visions. And I would highly recommend anyone who's looking for a director to hit up Dave Morrissey Jr., 2 R's, 2 S's. That's what I said to myself, too, when I was writing my notes. And we're going to bring it back to Mark Torres for more It Came From the Radio.
If you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough.
Go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or...
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.